Welcome into another edition of the Basketball Show podcast here on 92.9thegame.com. My name's Andy Bunker.
And I'm Arthur Trish.
We have to apologize. Well, the computer in this room has to apologize.
Yeah, computer.
For last week's podcast not being available.
We had a great show.
We really did.
Yeah. I mean, we got into the NBA draft, a lot of the guys who were playing in the NCAA tournament, and it was chock full of really necessary information for our listeners. And then we turn around and find out that the computer just ate it all up.
I think it was the best podcast we ever did. The most informative.
I have no qualms with that.
You were hilarious. I was hilarious. We were both, unfortunately, that one is off in the ether somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, that was something we could have shown and had Terry Fox listen to.
We would have got a raise.
And yeah, we could have gotten some more cash out of him.
And here we are.
Up from a penny.
We probably did make fun of Terry in that podcast, though, so maybe it's for the best that it went away.
Yeah,
maybe he deleted it. Well, we'll do our best to make sure this one doesn't get deleted and get it out to you. We do appreciate you being with us, of course. We've got four quarters, as always. Get into the big news of the week here in the first quarter. Second quarter at the Hawks. Third quarter, we'll do a little NCAA basketball. And then we've got a nice guest for our fourth quarter.
Yeah, she's a columnist for the Sacramento Bee. Formerly covered the Atlanta Hawks for about 8 years. She's been out in Sacramento for 20 years. Aileen Boyzon joined us, and we were happy to have her on. And it was really relevant to what's going on in society today. There was a police shooting in Sacramento, and they ended up shooting a gentleman by the name of Stephon Clark 20 times. He was accused of some break-ins, I believe, but the excess number of times he was shot has certainly come under fire, and protests have gone on in the Sacramento area, and it's disrupted a couple of Sacramento Kings basketball games. The Kings are back at home twice more this week as we get ready to tape this program. They play Thursday night, and on Saturday, I believe, they will face the Golden State Warriors. So it's going to be interesting to see how and what continues, because I don't think the protesters are going away. It's a bit of a quandary, because while I understand the protesters' belief and speaking and saying what's on their minds, people who may be supporting them, they could be losing some of them, because they do have the right to attend a Kings event or any other event in that area, should they choose to do so. And you shouldn't disrupt it to the point of where you're preventing people from spending their hard-earned money to be able to participate in certain events that they would like.
Yeah, and Hawks fans will remember, it was last Thursday night's game.
That's
the Hawks
right.
Played in Sacramento. It was delayed for about 20 minutes,
yeah.
And it was only played in front of, 500 people or so in the arena, because so many people couldn't get in because of the protest. And again, effective protest.
Right.
Got attention. Got more people talking about the issue than otherwise would have been. Got the Kings owner talking about the issue, and obviously we'll speak with Aileen about that in the fourth quarter too.
In addition, I couldn't recall a sporting event that suffered as much from a protest ever before. Certainly, professional game. We've had protests where athletes have invoked their beliefs into events like the Olympics and what have you. But this was the first time I think any professional league had ever had to deal with an actual event taking place on that particular night, having a disruption come to it that forced them to make some very big decisions. And I think, as we learned in our discussion with Aileen, that the Kings took a lot of great steps to try to help defuse the situation. They didn't try to escalate it. They didn't try to say things that would have people on either side of the fence, in my opinion, feeling negatively towards them. And where they go from here, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, no doubt. And like you said, they got a couple games this week, and we'll be very much tuned in to see what happens during those games, the protests surrounding those games. We'll talk to Aileen in the fourth quarter. Let's start here, though. Bad news out of the NBA, unfortunately. A guy who 365 days ago was sort of at the top of the world in what he was right. doing in Boston. It's been a really weird year for Isaiah Thomas since then. We find out this week that he's going to have to get hip surgery again.
Oh,
he's out
man.
For the rest of the year. And, of course, this offseason being his free agent year, tough times for Isaiah Thomas.
No doubt about it. He was finally finding his groove after struggling early in the season. He was out for a number of games when he joined the Cavs, and as his rehab went along. And when he came back to play, there was seemingly some friction going on within that franchise, to the point of where they ended up making numerous trades, not just with Isaiah Thomas, but Dwayne Wade and other players, to where they totally revamped their roster. And it seemed like things were finally going Isaiah's way, and he was getting his footing with the Lakers, and now this injury comes up. As a matter of fact, he was averaging about 15 points a game for the Lakers and maybe 5 assists. And I'm sure he was feeling confident about his chances on heading into free agency and having a more positive outlook. But now this injury, yet again, his hip, will certainly cause people to pause and have to think about how much, if they're interested in him, how much they can invest in him, or if he will have to take yet another 1 year contract.
Yeah, it changes everything. I mean, two off seasons in a row, he's going to have to get a hip surgery. Teams are going to wonder if it's a degenerative problem, if it's worth taking the risk on him to pay him a contract. Obviously, whatever contract he ends up getting is going to be nothing
right
compared to what the contract would have been like had he been a free agent last offseason and not had that surgery. He got a max contract.
Yeah, that's
He was almost the MVP of the league last year.
Correct, because that's was one of the questions that the Boston Celtics were looking at going into the offseason. Should we sign him now and invest that money in him? And everyone was surprised when first the machinations started with Kyrie Irving, and he was forcing the Cavs' hand and getting a trade, and lo and behold, it ended up being the Celtics. And on paper, it looked like it was going to work out for both teams. But he's now with the Lakers, and the rest, as they say, is history. But the pages of history certainly are incomplete as it relates to him, because we don't know where his future is going to be next season.
Well, and I just feel so bad for him. I mean, he was such a cool, unlikely story coming out of the University of Washington, left early, was the last pick of the draft in 2011.
Yep.
Kicked around the league for a couple years, some nice
Phoenix and Sacramento.
Yeah, had some nice games, nice little stretches in Sacramento. Didn't work out. Looked like maybe him and Goran Dragic and I think Eric Bledsoe were going to be sort of the new, like, they were going to go guard heavy lineup and run up and down the court. That
the
didn't work out.
Instead of the big three.
Yeah, and that ultimately partially because him and Goran Dragic couldn't get along, but partially because they couldn't play any defense with those guys on the court. It didn't work out, and he ends up in Boston and just completely revolutionizes his career to the point where we had these conversations about max contracts. Now, I'm biased, obviously. I haven't seen this guy play since he was like 14 years old, and he was always the littlest guy out there, even in high school. Being able for him to do what he did then and continue to do what he's doing now is amazing. I hope he's okay. I hope he bounced back from the hip surgery, but it just just bad memories from guys from the same area. It's just starting to kind of feel like Brandon Roy a little bit. A guy with all the talent in the world, and then injuries start to plague, and then Brandon retired. He's 27 years old.
And coaching Isaiah's older than that. High school basketball now?
Yeah, he hasn't lost a game.
Really?
In two seasons.
Wow.
And we talked a little bit last week. People won't know this because last week's podcast got deleted. Michael Porter Jr.
Correct.
Brandon Roy coached him his senior year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was this whole weird, like, scheme that was set up. We could another conversation for another day. But yeah, Brandon Roy coached there at that high school for a year, and Michael Porter Jr. and his brother were there. They went undefeated, won the state championship. He left that school, went to his alma mater, and became the head coach this year, went undefeated and won the state championship. So Brandon Roy is the greatest high school basketball coach of all time.
There could be some NCAA jobs available at the end of the season with this FBI investigation going on.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah.
You never know.
I don't know how. Anyway, I really hope that Isaiah Thomas's career doesn't mirror Brandon Roy's in that way.
Very
because
so.
too soon, so many injuries, and I'm pulling for him.
Well, and speaking of the injuries, they continue to rear its ugly head around the league. Last Friday night, the Hawks were playing the Warriors in a back-to-back situation after leaving Sacramento, and Steph Curry, who was returning from an ankle injury that cost him about 6 games, ended up suffering a PCL strain, and now he's out for at least 2 to 3 weeks, and everyone believes he will miss the first round of the playoffs, and there's some wonder as to whether or not he will see playoff action at all. I do know this. If he doesn't return, I don't like my chances of the Warriors winning the NBA championship, my prediction at the beginning of the season. I was already wavering on the Warriors just a little bit because they haven't played together as a unit for over maybe a month or so. Kevin Durant, as we tape this program on a Wednesday night, Kevin Durant is scheduled to come back on Thursday from a hip injury. Draymond Green is still out with a pelvic injury, and Klay Thompson is out with a broken hand or broken thumb. So they've not had their full force of all-stars for a while yet. Once they're back, and if they're all back and healthy, I have no doubt that the Warriors will at least make it to the Western Conference Final, and we'll see how they match up with those red-hot Houston Rockets. But it is a bit troubling that one game in, he suffers an injury, and it was a strange injury in and of itself because JaVale McGee was going up to block a shot, and as he bumped into one of his teammates, he fell backwards and directly into Steph's left knee, and Steph was done for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, this is bad luck at that point, which is the worst, but I'm with you. Like, I don't think you can hold it against – I don't think we have to hold it against ourselves if we're wrong about the Warriors.
Based
if
on
Steph
injury.
Curry doesn't play.
I mean,
people will say you were wrong, but there's a caveat,
okay?
Because a lot of people are going to be wrong about the Warriors with all these injuries included. It's just a bummer. Like, I want to see the full-strength Warriors against these full-strength Rockets and just see what it looks like. I think the Warriors would win, but it would be fun. It would be a lot. It would be very interesting to see these guys go at each other, and Harden and Durant being former teammates now in different places, both MVPs of the league, probably assuming Harden wins the MVP this year, which is another topic we'll get to in a minute. But it's just disappointing that I think they'll still play in the Western Conference Finals. I just want that to be as good as it possibly can be, and it probably won't be at this rate with all the injuries that are involved.
Yeah, and Curry is not the only player who's been injured over this week, and you'll have to judge as to how long these guys will be out. Kevin Love recently returned from his injury, and he ended up suffering a busted lip and maybe a broken tooth.
And a concussion.
And a concussion.
Yeah.
All in the first quarter of a game at Miami. And LaMarcus Aldridge is scheduled to have an MRI on his left knee. And the LaMarcus Aldridge injury could certainly be a doom for the San Antonio Spurs, because they've already had their problems with Kawhi Leonard most of the year as to whether or not he will return at any point in time during this regular season, let alone the playoffs. And now you may end up with their only all-star this season in Aldridge being out for a period of time, too, if this MRI comes back in a wrong way.
And speaking of the Spurs, their streak's going to come to an end.
If they don't make the playoffs.
Well, they've won 50 in a row.
Oh,
how many
right.
consecutive years? 19 consecutive years or something like that?
Right.
They're not, I mean, they could, if they go undefeated from here on out, win 50, because I think they've got 43 right now.
43 at this date.
And they've got seven left.
They're in the sixth spot in the West playoff race.
Right. So they'll probably make the playoffs, but 50 wins in a row is probably not going to happen. That's an incredible record that may not be broken.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think it'll be up there like the Lakers' 33 consecutive wins.
Sure.
But winning 50 games over that period of time is certainly
19 straight.
That's amazing.
It's
with
stupid.
The turnover that's gone on in that league.
Yeah.
And how many, given the idiocies and attitudes of some of the players and the coaching changes that go on around the league, the one constant that's been there the entire time is Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford. And they've been able to maintain that with players coming and going and the right blend and mix of guys, to the point of where this is the first year that there's any rumblings coming out of Spurs land, and that involves Kawhi Leonard. And so it was rather interesting even this week that Tony Parker even took a bit of a veiled shot at him by saying he had the same calf or a similar calf injury, and it didn't cost him as much time as it's cost Leonard. And that was unusual coming out of the Spurs locker room that you would have comments like that. And we're just going to have to wait to continue to see how this situation plays itself out, because it's not looking good at this particular point in time.
Now, we're running over in the first quarter, but whatever. That's fine, because this LeBron James story has to be talked about again.
We talked
about the MVP. I think James Harden's going to be the MVP and
should be.
I think Anthony Davis should get some votes and some respect for what he's done. I think Damian Lillard should get some love for what he's done this year. But if you ask LeBron, which somebody did, somebody asked him.
And this time is perfectly permissible for him to come up with this answer, because generally LeBron is always telling you what is going on with him and how great he is or what's going on with the team.
He was at least prompted.
Right. And so he was asked his thoughts on the MVP race, and he told, I believe it was probably my guy Tim Reynolds of the AP down in Miami, that what about the MVP race? And he said, quote, "I would vote for me." When I saw that last night, I wasn't surprised. I just kind of chuckled. I was like, yeah, it's par for the course. But he, to some degree, he's right in the sense of, and I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes second in the race, because he's, 15 years in his mid-30s, and he's still putting up stellar numbers.
And he's done this with two different teams this year.
Right.
the team they had for the first half and the team they've had for the second half since they traded everybody.
And if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't missed a game this year, unlike previous years.
Well, I think he's top five in minutes played, too. Yeah. All of this, by the way, is amazing. The fact that he's 15 years in, all the playoff games that he's played, and what he's doing this season. I know that probably should be considered in the MVP race as well. I don't know. I'm kind of starting to come around on enjoying this egomaniacal LeBron James. Like, I know a lot of times he does it himself and tweets about it or Instagrams about it or whatever, and we kind of make fun of it. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. He gives us something extra to talk about, and he's right.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being the black hat every now and then. And like you said, he backs it up each and every night. And so I know in the game in Miami, they lost for the 14th time in Miami. So that South Beach flu must be really strong down there. I don't know what the problem is involving the Cavs. But we also want to say, because we said this in our podcast last week and didn't get a chance, you didn't get a chance as listeners to hear this, but we also want to send our condolences out to Kyle Korver, the former Hawk who played a number of years here, was a member of that 60-win team that was the top seed in the Eastern Conference 4 years ago now. His brother passed away at the age of 27, and I believe his brother's name was Kirk, if I'm not mistaken. And we certainly want to, it goes without saying, we certainly want to mention that and hope that the Korver family is doing okay and as best they can in this trying time.
Let's get to the second quarter here and talk about the home team. Probably don't have to spend a lot of time on the home team.
No, we don't.
As they're doing exactly what we expect them to do, continuing to lose, stumble to the finish line, and try to get up there in that lottery. One interesting thing, though, probably the most interesting thing, unfortunately, that's happened this week is the Dennis Schroeder story. The fact that it's being recommended by state officials.
DeKalb County officials here in Georgia.
Yeah, DeKalb County, that his fracas, his fight from last September, be tried as a felony instead of a misdemeanor, which is everyone thought it was going to be. Now, it's interesting. This kind of went away for a while. It's taking a long time. Never knew exactly when this was going to play itself out. Well, it pops up again here at the end of the season. I'll be shocked if Dennis Schroeder plays another game this year for the Hawks because I just don't think they want to deal with this.
I don't think they do. I'm surprised this didn't linger into the summer because if you remember the Mike Scott incident from 2 summers ago, involving a drug possession charge, happened in the summer, and it went on throughout the season to where we heard very little about it. And then the case was ultimately dismissed and has freed him up to be able to continue his career with the Wizards. But in this case, this is a very serious charge. I think I read that it could put him away for at least 10 years, a maximum charge.
That's the max, yeah.
Of 10 years. And we had an attorney, local attorney, Randy Kessler, on yesterday, and while he seems to feel that if a serious enough charge is up against Dennis, he feels they will reach some kind of plea that he doesn't have to do any jail time. We'll have to wait and see, because a lot of this will certainly depend on the judge you get, if it's a jury trial and a lot of other law and order ramifications. Dun, dun. But I sort of agree with you. Dennis Schroeder hasn't been one of my most favorite Hawks since his time here for a number of reasons. And this was certainly disturbing when we first heard this story because I'm not sure if he still owns his so-called club, Hooker Bar, but he was caught at another Hooker Bar getting into it with a gentleman, to where video has revealed that he and his friends, his little posse, was beating this guy up and also kicking him. And that's unbecoming of any individual, let alone a professional basketball player.
It's terrible.
And you wonder what, first of all, you have your own place. Why are you at another place? And secondly,
he's getting hookah recipes.
Right. And you have more to lose than anybody within your party. So what are you doing?
And by the way, this took place during the summer that they talked about him being the leader
of the team,
being the guy who was going to assume the leadership role in the franchise because all the other veterans had left or been traded.
The room in which we taped this podcast has a poster of the Hawks on the front door, and it stems from, I believe, Mike Budenholzer's first, if not second year with the Hawks, but it was the season in which they won the 60 games in the Central Division title and made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And basically, he is the last man standing.
It's him
on that poster, and Kent Bazemore,
and I think Muscala,
and Mike Muscala,
might
you're
be
right.
on there too.
And
but you're right.
But he has been viewed as the leader of that team and the guy they've turned the keys to the kingdom over to. And this is how you represent your franchise. And very little has been done with him over the course of the season in terms of off the court
appearances, publicity,
or marketing plans, and right. this, that, and the other. And it's going to be interesting.
There's
to see
a reason
how,
for that.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with
right.
Their,
but I think we've been around sports. Obviously, you've been mm-hmm. involved in these decisions mm-hmm. before. When that happens, it's not by accident.
No,
you put guys out there that you want out there, like the Braves last year with Dansby Swanson.
Correct.
That was a mistake, but they had him out there at the forefront because they wanted him to be the face of the franchise and the future of the franchise. You would think that Dennis would be that guy, given his ability, given his age, given his contract status, but he's not out there, which you know is obvious why, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not here long term.
Well, and there comes a time when within each and every one of us we have to grow up, and Dennis is making a boatload of money to play a sport that we all would love to play, and we would all love to be handsomely paid to do. And there comes some responsibility with that. And if you are viewed as the franchise's face, you have to – maybe that's a burden that he can't carry, but it comes with the territory. And he's going to have to really, when this season is over with – and he'll probably go back to France and maybe play for their national team. But he's going to have to
Germany.
Have some – Germany, I'm sorry. He will have to definitely think long and hard about his NBA future because – whether he's here when the season rolls around next October or not remains to be seen. But I don't know how much his situation will further handcuff the Hawks if they do desire to move him along. Because while he certainly shows flashes of brilliance, he had a 41-point game
yeah.
Recently within the past month. He gives you, like I said, flashes of that to where you wonder if he can keep it up on a consistent basis, what the Hawks might have in their point guard. But there are times when you're just constantly shaking your head or muttering under your breath for some of the things that he does on the court and off the court to the point of where you wonder if it's all worth it.
I think it's not. But I think I've been honest about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
My biggest frustration about this, beyond the guy who was assaulted, I hope that he's okay and mm-hmm. I hope that he's compensated, mm-hmm. is that the trade value for Dennis Schroeder is now through the floor.
Yeah.
You can't move him. You can't move a guy who's got a pending felony.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
And the league hasn't been able to rule on it yet either, because until this matter is adjudicated,
right.
they won't do anything.
They can't do anything about it. So no team is going to take that on.
Well, and he will miss some games whenever
eventually.
The next season rolls around
right.
and if this case is over by then, he will miss a portion of games, and I think it's going to be more than one or two that he will miss. So It remains to be seen how this will all play out, but it's certainly this time in the year, this is the last thing the Hawks need to hear as they muddle through the remaining, what do they have left, 8 games left
yeah.
as we tape this program, 4 at home and 4 on the road with 2 against the Sixers. And as we segue to that Sixers game, an interesting development popped up on Twitter on today as we tape this, that the lack of respect that the Hawks are getting, and granted, maybe it's well-deserved considering their record, one Ben Simmons, Rookie of the Year Ben Simmons, candidate Ben Simmons, who missed all of last season a year ago with his injuries, decided to take a shot at the Hawks. And I want you to tell me if you thought it was a level of disrespect. We'll play the audio here and let you listeners get a take of it. But as we come out of that, Randy, I did it again. I called you Randy. Andy and I will talk
nice
about this.
Nice to meet
this.
You, Arthur. I'm glad you're enjoying this podcast as much as I am.
See
Randy.
What happens when we don't do this and we miss a week?
I guess. I see you every day.
But Andy and I will talk about our thoughts on this and whether we consider this a kind of backhanded slap at the Hawks.
You getting it. Hop on, man. Play one.
Yeah, we need one more, man.
You got time. Who do you play tomorrow?
Hawks.
There you go. You got plenty of time.
Yes, it absolutely is a backhanded slap at the Hawks. Not even backhanded, front-handed, full fist. He says, you can sit here and play video games with me as long as you want. You have plenty of time. You're playing the Hawks.
He's talking to Carl Anthony Towns as they get ready for their Thursday night game
right.
against the Hawks. And they're playing video games, and I guess they must play frequently to the point of they may play more than multiple games, I guess, and I guess it goes into the night. And so he says, well, you can at least play one game. And so who are you playing the next night? And it's the Hawks. Oh, yeah, you've got time.
Yeah, you got time. And he's right. I mean, but that's what we hope can be changed, mm-hmm. right? Like that. I think that's a very important insight into where the Hawks are as a franchise right now. I know it's a funny thing, but it also matters. Like, these are two of the young stars in the NBA.
Right.
They're laughing at the Hawks franchise.
Well, and this is a franchise people have laughed at for quite a while.
Right.
I mean, even with the ultimate phrase, trust the process, and how many times they uttered that over the past 5 or 6 years to the point where they finally qualify for the playoffs. We'll see how far they're able to go. I think they can certainly win a first-round series, and I think they can pose some problems for a team depending on who that is in the second round. I like what they bring to the table. They're regaining the number one pick on their roster,
Markelle Fultz.
Markelle Fultz. Me and my tongue tonight.
So you have
Fultz.
No respect for University of Washington, guys.
Yeah,
Markelle Fultz, Isaiah Thomas.
The other purple and gold.
Exactly.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what it comes
that's
from.
That's what it's coming from.
The LSU UW thing.
Representing the LSU. My apologies
to
you,
the
Washington guys. But I do think the Sixers will have a great chance of making some noise in the playoffs, and it will certainly be a good proving ground and testing a spot for them as they move ahead with this bunch, because a lot of those guys are around the same age. They've only played one or two seasons max. You've got Joel Embiid, who was a Rookie of the Year candidate a year ago himself. Ben Simmons, who I think will win the award this year. Markel, who would have been in the running had he played this year. But here's my question to you. I'm of the opinion that as good as the Sixers have been playing, I wouldn't risk playing him, Fultz, that is, a heck of a lot if you're unsure as to how much he can actually give you at this point in time, because what you don't want to do is disrupt how you've been playing and disrupt other people's minutes to where it may affect you going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I was surprised that they brought him back when they decided to bring him back, because there wasn't a whole lot of conversation about it until they announced that they were doing it
right.
the other night. Now, he played well.
Mm-hmm.
14 minutes, 10 points, 8 assists. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a really nice return to the NBA, which was great because there had been a lot of concerns, not only about him physically, but mentally, dealing with the shot that he was struggling with. So I don't know. I don't know what role he's going to exactly play with them heading into the playoffs. I can't imagine that they would be trying to work in these final 2 weeks of the season, work him in to be like a big-time rotation player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just wanted to get him back out there, get him a taste of it. So you don't go into the offseason where everyone's saying that it was a disaster to make that pick. Yeah. You look around the rest of the league, there's some talented rookies playing this season. But I was surprised to see him out there the way that he was.
I know they will probably have him in summer league again.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And the one thing that disappointed me about his performance the other night was postgame, when he refused to answer questions about his shoulder and whether or not the injury was part of one of the reasons why he was off the court for as long as he was. There's been a lot of mystery as to what has gone on with his shot and how the hitch developed and how he had to kind of work to improve that shot. But not answering the question left more questions. And I'm not sure if that was on instructions from the team's PR staff or the GM's office, but I think they set him up to be made ridicule of and criticized even more by not letting him speak about it. Because if he would have spoken about it then, he would have gotten it out of the way and would never have to speak about it again.
Do you ever instruct somebody not to talk about something as a PR person?
I had to do that. Not often, because a lot of times, unless they did something off the court that was borderline troublesome and that could get them in any trouble, they had to watch what they say and how they said it, or maybe at that point in time it wasn't necessary for them to speak on behalf of the incident. There was one, we had one player, Josh Powell, who had gotten into an incident driving to a Hawks game, and it was right outside of, or right down the street up from Phillips Arena, to where a cop proceeded to arrest him before the game. And he was sitting out on the curb in handcuffs, and I forget what the issue stemmed from, but when he came into the building, we learned more about why it happened and what had gone on. What we had to make sure was that he didn't inflame the situation, because he had to get his day in court But we didn't want him to be hyped up on emotion, that he would react in a way that it would be used against him, or if he would say something that was would add to the case that was going to come against him. And I forget what ended up happening with the eventual outcome of that case, but Josh was a local player here in Atlanta, had played at Clemson. Ended up playing with the Lakers, won a ring with the Lakers during one of those years, the Kobe years, and was a nice guy while he was here. And this particular day, it was his time to be in the crosshairs with local Atlanta PD. And so, yeah, it happens. So I can understand if the franchise told him, but somebody should have stepped in and said something on behalf of Markell in that sense. Because he's standing there looking dumbfounded and then wiping his brow, and the questions are continually being fired at him, and there's just dead silence, and it wasn't a good look. And so I wished the Sixers would have handled that better, but maybe they now have learned from it and will handle it better the next time.
Markelle Fultz, number one pick. Ben Simmons, number one pick. Joel Embiid, number three pick.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope we're talking about something like that here in Atlanta a couple years from now.
Time will tell.
Look at what this year has been. Hopefully it results in that. All right, on to the third quarter here on the Basketball Show podcast. We spent a lot of time, actually, last week talking about the NCAA tournament.
A lot.
You wouldn't know that because, well, you didn't get to hear the podcast last week. But I think we owe it to the NCAA tournament to spend a little more time talking about it this week. And where do you want to start? You want to start with the NBA prospects or the story of all stories, Loyola Chicago making it to the Final Four?
Let's go with the Atlanta South Regional darlings, Loyola Chicago. I was fortunate to get the chance to work in a press capacity assisting Georgia Tech at the weekend's events. And I must say, I was impressed with that team. If you hadn't followed their story and the Sister Jean component to it, they're a very good basketball team. All the other stuff aside, they could really make life difficult for a Michigan team on Saturday night in the national semifinal game. The one thing that one of the reasons why I'm pulling for them, and my boy Sekou Smith won't like that because he's a big Michigan guy, and so he's already been crowing in my ear for the past few days about this. But Loyola Chicago is the fourth number one seed to make it to the Final Four.
Number 11 seed. Yeah.
Number 11 seed to make it to the Final Four, but none of the 11 seeds have actually won. I was at the university that made it the first time around, and that was LSU.
Oh.
We won, much like Loyola Chicago, the South Region here in Atlanta, where we disposed of two previous number ones that season, Georgia Tech and Kentucky, to move on to the Dallas Final Four, where we were beaten by Danny Ferry and his Duke team. But
wow, long standing.
Yeah. So it was.
What year was this?
This was 1986.
Okay.
My first year, ironically enough, in working at LSU. And we had beaten Purdue and Memphis State in the regional in Baton Rouge. And Memphis State had Keith Lee and William Bedford on those teams. Andre Turner was the point guard. Dana Kirk was the head coach. And they too, at one point that season, if I'm not mistaken, were a number one. So Dale Brown's bunch of Tigers. Undersized, but plenty of heart and spirit, led by a 6'6 Ricky Blanton at center, was able to get to the NCAA Final Four by going through, like I said, a Georgia Tech team that featured Mark Price, Bruce Dalrymple, John Sally, Bon Joseph, and a Kentucky team that featured the SEC Player of the Year that year in Kenny Skywalker. And we had no business being there. And to win against Purdue, that regional was played in Baton Rouge. So the first two games were in Baton Rouge. We proceeded to come to Atlanta, and we went off to Dallas. But back to Loyola Chicago, I love the way that team plays because they will backdoor you to death. Their two guards have played together since they were in the third grade, and I think they know each other like the back of their hand.
They're best friends.
Yes, and when you have situations like that, much like the Fab Five in from the Michigan days, those guys knew every tendency of each other. And so they knew where they would be on the floor. They knew best positions to get a player the ball. And so I would not be surprised if on Monday night, when we get around to the final game, that Loyola Chicago is doing it yet again.
I hope they are. I hope they beat Michigan. Nothing against Michigan. Yep. I just want the story.
Yeah.
And I hope they beat whoever makes it to the final, whether it's Villanova or Kansas. Just for the sheer unlikeliness of it and the argument on behalf of Cinderella. Like, we are losing sight of the value of the little guy, I think, in sports because of money. Like, the NCAA just doesn't care about these guys anymore. If Loyola Chicago wouldn't have won their conference, they wouldn't have got an at-large bid, though they deserved one.
No doubt.
They're, what, 25-5 on the season? They beat Florida in Gainesville. Like, they did everything that they were supposed to do this year to make the tournament, but they would have been overlooked because...
Hey, look, it's not their fault that Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, and we can continue to go on and on with the Kentucky... continued to lose in the tournament, and those teams were bounced.
It's not
their fault.
It's not.
They played the games in front of them, took advantage of the situations, and some of those teams were eliminated early. And I think come Monday night, they will be playing the Villanova Wildcats. I've said that was a team I thought would win from the start of this tournament. I love the way Jay Wright coaches his team. His demeanor is exceptional. I love his backcourt. And I think the player who makes them go is Jalen Brunson. Oh, yeah. I love everything he brings to the table. He runs that team with efficiency, and he has that senior leadership that he's able to bring to the table each and every night. And he plays exceptional defense as well. It's not all about offense, and Mikhail Bridges is able to get it done when they need a basket here or there. Plus, their post players can certainly make things happen as well. They can take you inside and outside. They love to bang. And Kansas, it won't back down, as we saw in their win against Duke. They certainly won't be this won't be a blowout in any way, shape, or form. And it wouldn't surprise me if that game even ends up going in overtime. But Kansas is a very experienced club as well. And we saw a great play from Devontae Graham throughout the tournament. And the player who went off Sunday against Duke ended up with...
Hello, Newman.
Yeah, Malik. Yeah. Malik Newman ended up with about 25 or 27 points, if I'm not mistaken.
And then Gerald Vick is a nice player, too. I love Devontae Graham.
Yeah.
He's so much fun to watch. He's like that quintessential college player
point guard, yes.
Who's going to, you know, have a very nice, memorable college career. Probably not going to do a ton in the NBA. That doesn't matter one way or the other, but... I love watching him play. Reminds me kind of Shabazz Napier a little bit and the run that UConn went on with him a few years back. Kevin Ollie, his first year, I think, there as the coach. Jalen Brunson is really interesting to me as we sort of talk about this from an NBA context. 25 years ago, Jalen Brunson would have been a guy that NBA teams would have looked at like, I want that guy to be my point guard. I don't know if he would have been a top 10 draft pick, but Jalen Brunson would have been drafted. He would have been brought in, and a team would have thought to themselves that that's a guy that you can kind of build a team around. I mean, he'll get drafted probably, but Jalen Brunson's not going to go on to have a great NBA career. So it's interesting how the NBA has shifted that way.
And I think you're right, because he would have been a tremendous leader. He captained this team.
He's like Mark Jackson.
Yeah, and a guy who was willing to take the big shot. To show all those characteristics they would have been looking for in late game situations and what have you. But because of the one and done rule and the promise of what could become with a lot of these 18, 19 year olds, the entire facet of the NBA has changed to the point of where you're building and putting your hopes and dreams on expectations, not what someone has actually done for a length of time. And so you're hoping that these guys who come out this year, the DeAndre Ayton's, the kid from Duke declared
Bagley.
Today, Marvin Bagley III declared today, and a host of others have certainly decided to make the plunge into the NBA. We'll have to see if they will retain an attorney and make themselves eligible for the draft come July or late June. But That's a lot of pressure for a franchise to go through, and especially if you have multiple draft picks like the Hawks do, because while they could end up with a top three pick, they also have, as of right now, the 24th and 26th pick. And that could be solidified if Minnesota goes to the playoffs, that they'll end up with another pick. So I do like this draft from maybe picks 1 through 10. Jalen Brunson, I think, will get drafted, and I think he may surprise some people because he comes from good stock. His dad played over 10, 12 years in the pros and is currently an assistant coach with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Wouldn't he be a great guy to take at the end of the first round?
Yeah
I would absolutely, because the Hawks, say they get the third pick. They're not taking a guard.
Right.
They're going to, well, I guess if you consider Doncic to be a guard, he's a guy that they would consider. But at the third pick, it's going to be whoever falls between Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, Michael Porter Jr., whatever, it's going to be one of those four guys that they'll end up taking.
Well, let's face it. They had a a guy that sort of, now that I think about this, they had a guy that kind of is similar to Jalen Brunson in Quinn Cook in here this past year, who they released and who is now starting, ironically enough, for the champion Warriors.
Right.
With Steph Curry's absence. So, yeah, I think there's a place for him in the NBA, but I think Quinn Cook was one of those guys who played for, I think he stayed at Duke for a number of years. I don't think he was a
one and done. Stayed all 4 years
at
Duke.
Yeah, and one of those guys
certainly seemed like he did.
He sure did. And that's the point with Devontae Graham.
Yeah.
It seems like he's been there forever. And some of these guys, you look around, you're still here. and isn't it time for you to go? But
remember Perry Ellis from Kansas?
Even had the hairline
to
match.
He looked like he was 45 years old.
But I think we're looking at a really good Final Four because of the different storylines and the fact that you have Cinderella, you have a Michigan team that knocked out Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament, and they've gone on a similar run to like they did the last time they won it in 1989 with Ramil Robinson hitting those free throws against Seton Hall. To shifting to Kansas, having won their last tournament in San Antonio. And now with Villanova being back 2 years after winning their national championship. So there's a lot of storylines emanating from this weekend's tournament in San Antonio, to where I hope that the ratings reflect that as well. Because we know how finicky people can be when it's not the Big Four, or every team is a blue blood or has that heritage, and they may not want to tune in, but you may miss something if you don't.
Just as one ending note, doesn't matter that much, but my bracket basically busted like everyone else's, although I had Michigan playing Villanova in the championship and Villanova winning.
Did you?
So there's a chance. I don't know if that means I could win the bracket pool or not, but there's a chance I'll still exist. Didn't have Loyola Chicago in the Final Four, though, believe it or not.
Well, certainly not many did.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the ESPN championship bracket, what did they say the other day? Less than 5%
I think it was less than 1% had the Final Four.
And that's even amazing.
Right.
And I'm sure somebody went to Loyola Chicago and had some background that had them in.
The only people that had them in had to have been grads of Loyola.
So hopefully Monday night it's Loyola Chicago versus Villanova, and I still think ultimately the national champion will be the Villanova Wildcats.
I agree with you, but I hope it's Loyola.
And this is the fourth quarter of the basketball show, and I'm happy to have on with Randy and myself Aileen Boisan. She's a columnist with the Sacramento Bee and a former Atlanta Hawks beat writer back in the day, back when the Omni was around. So if I'm telling a little bit of her age and my age, well, you can figure it out on your own, but we won't go there.
That, right?
Aileen was fortunate to be in the Sacramento area for how many years now?
20
years. Wow. And she, unfortunately, or I should say fortunately, was around during this weekend's protest that went on with a lot of the residents in that area because of the police shooting of Stephon Clark. You may have heard of the story where a police officer shot him as he was running away from a supposed crime, and they shot him excessively, in my opinion, 20 times in his grandmother's backyard. And since that time, residents out in the Sacramento area have not necessarily halted to Sacramento Kings games, but at least affected the way those games operate in terms of fans being able to enter the building, as well as the ultimate attendance in the building. And ironically enough, the first protest that went on last Friday night involved our own Atlanta Hawks, who happened to be in town for that game. And so, if I'm not mistaken, Aileen, about 200 people were in attendance?
Oh, I think a little bit more than that.
Okay.
Yeah, they announced last night's crowd was 4,000, but I think I would say several hundred the other night when the Hawks were here. I would have gone a little bit more than that.
What is the temperature of the mood of people from what you've been able to gather over the past week or so?
Well, it's rising. Tensions are rising for a number of reasons. I think the initial night, I think there was a lot of support to the protesters surrounding the body. I mean, I talked to, you know, majority of people I talked to that were turned away, families with kids, they actually kind of endorsed the movie. They said it was, you know, it was important, and that if they missed, it caused them to miss a game. Of course, they're getting refunds, but if it cost them to miss a game and be inconvenienced, then it was well worth it. I think what happened last night was unfortunate. Circumstances changed. So there was a meeting in open forum at the City Hall Chambers, which is about two blocks, would be north of the Golden One Center. And I guess during the overflow crowd that was there, Trevante Stephon Clark's brother showed up with his mother and his grandmother, and he came, you know, angrily walking down the walkway and basically plopped himself on the dais by the right in front of the mayor and began spewing all sorts of profanities, telling the mayor to shut the bleep up. And it was really it's a bad scene, you know, and I think that the mayor, Daryl Steinberg, very progressive, by the way, has done a lot of good for our community. He didn't raise the, try to keep the temperatures down, so he tried to call his 15, tried to talk to Stephon Clark's brother, but just kept getting, you know, shouted down with more profanity comments and whatnot. So Daryl called a recess, and the council members moved to the back. They left the recess for several minutes. In the meantime, the protesters by this time were pretty much riled up. They're chanting, they're dancing on the tables, knocking over computers. And they leave the chambers, and then they start walking over to the Golden One Center, obviously aware that there was another game. So they arrived at the arena, I guess, about 30 minutes before tip-off, and surrounded the building again and knocked over some metal detectors and whatnot. But I think there was a lot less empathy last night. I think the video went viral on Twitter of Stephon Clark's brother, you know, his behavior inside the council chambers, I think, did not help the cause. I think people understand that he's outraged and, reacting to what obviously the death of his brother is, you know, indescribable. I mean, you can't, until that happens to you. Mm-hmm. But it was out of line. And I think that, you could try to sympathize and whatnot, but it was out of line. And I think that, you know, that didn't help matters. There was like no police presence in the chambers.
Really?
So it went on. Oh yeah, and so it was chaos, very chaotic. You should look at the video. And I think the attempt has been to keep the police back so that they don't antagonize, you know, and incite violence here. So there's that. So I think the mood. A lot of people that were supporters of this, people I've talked to, are like not. They're kind of frustrated. And I think so. The rest of the week it's going to be interesting because tomorrow is the funeral. For Stephon Clark, Al Sharpton's coming in. He's delivering the eulogy, and then the Warriors. There's a game that night. So again, the Golden One Center, which is about 4 or 5 miles from the site of the funeral.
Okay.
And then on Saturday, the Warriors are here, and that's going to be interesting. They'll bring a lot of Warriors fans over for that. But during that day, there's a major rally planned at the steps of the Capitol building, and Al Sharpton is also going to be part of that. So that's like, you know, 2 blocks from the Golden One Center. So that's the concern here is trying to keep that from, you know, developing or, you know, elevating into something more than a peaceful protest. So now the cops, what we're hearing today, the cops are going to be much more of a force, or more of an aggressive presence if you'd be both around the arena and certainly around the civil, you know, the chambers, city council chambers. So it's pretty much on edge. I mean, we're still waiting. Several of the players, the Kings, are trying to get players together to participate in a town hall. Garrett Temple, who is very, very vocal. You know, his father, as you know, was the first African-American player to play for LSU. Wonderful person. And so Garrett is, you know, very involved in these movements. And he's been, you know, he's been very, very influential, very helpful. So he's trying to organize something. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. I mean, you know, as someone who lives here for 20 years and who lived in Atlanta for 8 years, and I got to know John Lewis, Congressman Lewis. I mean, we were like literally workout buddies at the CNN Athletic Center on adjacent, you know, treadmills. You know, I spent time in D.C. with him in walking the halls of Congress, and he told these stories. I saw, you know, the knife wound in his abdomen from when he marched on the, you know, Edmund Pettus Bridge. So I have strong feelings about this, and I just, for my community sake, I really hope that it remains peaceful, because I just think the message is so much more powerful and resonates, to a much broader audience if it can be a peaceful protest, if things do not deteriorate or escalate, as it were.
Well, we saw the owner of the team that first night go out on the court and address the crowd, and I don't know a whole lot about him, but it was surprising to me to see an owner do that, because we just haven't seen owners in sports, football, baseball, basketball, up until that moment, really have a strong voice in any of these matters. I don't know if that was surprising to you, but how involved is he going to remain in trying to further this discussion?
Well, I know that they met with...
Really?
Okay, he's very impressive. I mean, Vivek is very cool. He's a very shy person. He's Indian, very shy, very tiny. He almost looks like someone said looks like a jockey out there. But, you know, my complaint with him has always been he's got handlers around him all the time, you know, protecting him from himself because he's, you know, when he first got in, like a lot of owners, they talk too much. They think they know everything, you know, and it backfires on them. But he went out there and just spoke from the heart. It was unscripted. Nobody was around him. His handlers were nowhere to be found. And it was very powerful and, you know, really spoke from the heart. And I think it really moved people. And it kind of like reflected, I think, kind of our community. I mean, Sacramento is, you know, it's either the most diverse community per capita of any place in the country. You know, the large numbers of Asians, Eastern Europeans, because of the gold rush, you know, people from all over the world came and settled in this area and stayed. So it's always been kind of our calling card here. So he was, you know, it's amazing. It's impressive. And then now you want to see, you know, my thought is I really hope players, the Kings players and other players really continue to speak out. You know, Dirk Nowitzki and Harrison Barnes for the Mavericks and Rick Carlisle last night had some very strong things to say, endorsing the whole concept of protesting, and, you know, the role that, you know, the people should have, the role that players can have in this. Because I do think that, you know, sports has a role in society. It's got an elevated role. We know that. We see it all the time, the influence that LeBron James has had. You know, Arthur, you remember, we lived through a period where, you know, between Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton and some Craig Hodges, there were years, decades, yeah, where you didn't hear anything from any player. Michael Jordan, you couldn't provoke Michael Jordan to say something political.
Well, as he always said, Republicans buy Nikes too.
Right, right. And
go ahead.
And, you know, and to be like, and I just spoke with Wayne Embry, you know, he was the first African American GM, the first African American team president of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he pointed out that, you know, there was that lull there between when players boycotted, you know, Russells and the Wilts and the Embrys. They boycotted games because of segregation and terrible conditions as they traveled the country. And the glory, you know, the glory years of the 80s, like, you know, that when things, he said, things got much better after the Civil Rights and Anti-War Movement. And he said, we really thought during the 80s, you just thought things were going so well that people didn't feel a need, didn't feel compelled to invest themselves in social issues or social activism. And now it's, you know, what's going on in the country right now. And I think, you know, clearly incited by the Donald Trump presidency. I think we can all agree with that. And, you know, just the police shootings in the last few years, it's hard. It's just tough times out here. Dark times for our country.
Well, I thought it was very powerful of what Vivek Ranadive said on Friday night when he made the statement. We recognize that it's not business, not just business as usual. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right, because sports, as you said earlier, is a beacon to what goes on in society. And it's supposed to be the toy and games department and take our minds off of what goes on in our everyday lives and the problems we may face here and there. But more and more, activism has returned to sports. I mean, it's not immune to sports. I mean, we saw this dating back to the 1968 Olympics with the two American players protesting after one of their races, and they subsequently was banned from the Olympic Village and are now treated as American heroes. Now, they had to pay a price for that. They
certainly Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali as well. And then you had the flip side, George Foreman, who didn't want to participate in that protest and went on to be the heavyweight champion of the world one day himself. And to today's time, when you have players like Colin Kaepernick, and as you said, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and the like, Chris Paul certainly making their statements known when situations warrant. But I think what I was most pleased with, in addition to the owner taking a step forward on Friday night, was the fact that the Kings and the Celtics put together this video, this PSA that's now running that hasn't gotten as much attention as I thought it would, surprisingly. And given how difficult sometimes it is to get players to commit to any particular civic cause jointly, I thought this was a tremendous message by both franchises to do this. And the PSA was calling for police accountability in memory of Stephon Clark. And in addition, both teams wore T-shirts. I think this game was Sunday night, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it was Friday night.
Friday night. And it said, accountability, we are one, hashtag Stephon Clark. And I also want to make a point that former Kings player DeMarcus Cousins and ex-Kings forward Matt Barnes have offered to play for Clark's funeral. They didn't have to do that. But as you know, you dealt with both of those guys. And while they're on the court present at times, may have driven people crazy out in that area, they certainly have been two civic-minded players around the NBA. And I applaud them for getting involved. And I'm sure this is not something that they're just doing to grab any kind of attention. This is something that's coming from the bottom of their heart.
Right. Well, that's particularly true for DeMarcus. I mean, DeMarcus, for his years here, was, you know, all over the community, involved with everything, and just, you know, there were no issues with him in the community. He was, in that regard, a model citizen. You know, Matt Barnes, there were issues, the club fights, the beating up the woman in the barn. You know, and there were his reputation in this community is not stellar by any stretch, but, you know, this is the right thing. I mean, they're offering to help the family of this person. You know, Matt's from Sacramento. Mm-hmm. He went to high school here. You know, so I think people have, you know, really appreciated what they're doing. Again, particularly DeMarcus, because he's been so consistent with his message, and he's been, you know, unwavering, you know. So I think, you know, nobody's perfect in this world, right? Everybody has flaws.
No doubt.
But it's, you know, when you have an opportunity to do something good for your fellow man or woman, and you have the resources to do it, you can't help but appreciate and applaud them for doing it.
Aileen, I'll end it on this note. What has impressed you over your years of covering the NBA that distinguishes it from the other leagues, Major League Baseball or the NFL?
It's no comparison. It's part of my column for tomorrow, so please read factbee.com. It's just amazing. I go back to I started covering the league in 81, and I saw, you know, isolated incidents of racism. I was in a bar and a restaurant with Don Chaney and some of the coaches and another writer after a game in San Antonio, and some guy behind me made a comment like, "Why are you talking to that black man?" So, I've seen, you know, been subjected to some of what the players were subjected to through the years. But what always struck me is the players' willingness to be involved, the fact that they care so much, and the leadership. I mean, you know, you have to go back to, and Wayne Embry made this point. He said every commissioner that he's known since he entered the league was started with Maurice Podoloff. He named Walter Kennedy. He named Larry O'Brien, David Stern. We all know before he became commissioner or became legal counsel for the NBA, mm-hmm. and he won a major lawsuit, civil rights lawsuit, against housing discrimination in New Jersey. So these are near and dear issues, you know, and then following David, now Adam Silver, who is so outspoken and so vocal of his support of the players for their activism. So I just think that's very different. You don't see that. And also, you know, look at the NBA owners. You know, you have a few that are conservative or right-wingers that are not but yet the NBA, it's look at the owners. They're a pretty progressive bunch. And I think those are two factors that are huge. It starts at the top, right? Like you said, you heard Ron Adibe, but who have you heard that from? You know, Mark right. Cuban has been very outspoken. He was here last night as well, talking about speaking in favor of the protesters and the players. So those are factors. And I just think that, you know, NBA players, I mean, they're 75% African-American. And, you know, a lot of the players now in the league that come in the league are their international players, but a lot of them have known hardship, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, when you also have coaches like Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, and
right.
Stan Van Gundy stepping out there and making comments that some other coaches in other leagues or colleges have yet to take
right.
a stand on it makes you appreciate what the total person and the total package that these coaches bring to the table, because once
right.
again they can do like the rest of them. There are a lot of coaches out there who are sitting back and letting their players twist in the wind when these situations warrant, and they do have platforms that they can certainly speak to some of the society's ills, and then yet they don't want to do so, and it's a credit to those guys and what they've been able to accomplish that they feel comfortable with being able to do that. We certainly want to thank you for joining us on the Basketball Show podcast here in Atlanta, and hopefully some people still around this area in these parts remember you from your days in covering the Hawks. And as you said, people can follow you at Aileen_Voisin, B, that's V as in Victor, OISIN, at SACB_sports. So we certainly thank you for joining us tonight.
Arthur, always a pleasure, and like I said, I've enjoyed my 8 years in Atlanta, and now here I'm in California, and, you know, who knew?
No doubt.
Tell Carmen if you run across the phone, please give him my best.
Certainly will. Thank you, Aileen.
Okay, Arthur, good talking to you.
Take care.